I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Listen, all you mother...
Politics, politics, humor, humor, tequila, tequila, and an IQ of under 64. Yeah. You're listening to Bart Cop Radio, 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 Radio.
Hello, hello, and welcome to Bart Cop Radio Show number 132. How are you doing? My name is Bart. I'm driving the big boat today. And as always, we have an explanation to go with today's show. No, I didn't lose most of it. Matter of fact, there was too much of it. I had like 7 bits put together. And after I put 5 bits on the big board, it was full, so I got extra bits. But as always, today's show takes little explanation. It was recorded on Tuesday, which was Super Hamster Day. And when I recorded it, I was a little angry because the mainstream whore media guaranteed us all, that Hillary's going to lose by somewhere between 10 and 15 points. So I thought, well, that's it. We lost our best shot, but what the heck? In a way, that's good news. I mean, I was kind of mad, but I was also kind of in a good mood because once the race is decided, then I can get behind the winner. In this case, I thought it was going to be Obama. And I thought, well, perfect now. We have one guy. We're going into the big contest with the one guy who I don't think is the best, but hey, he's the best. You go into the election with the nominee you have, not the nominee you want. So in that sense, I was really relieved. You know, I thought, aha, now we can call the big truce. And we can, all the people who hate me, all the anti-Hillary people who left, they can come back. We can all join together and sing Kumbaya and go get the bad fascist bastards. But then they pull me back in. So now she's back in the race. That's why I came up with the idea for the truce on February 5th. We can fight like cats and dogs till then, but on February 5th, we all come together for the big Kumbaya party at Casa de Bart. Okay, like I said, today's show is way, way too big, so we're going to have to cut this short. Little shot at Chinaco. Damn, did you hear that? Hardly a pop at all. I'll let you know, we're almost out. Masfina. Oh, that's so nice. What would I do without my Chinaco? Well, okay, no time to tarry. Get the Big Big Show!
This is www.bartcop.com.
I guess it's been 3 weeks since the last radio show. We had Christmas to get through. We had New Year's to get through. And so much has happened. I swear, if I didn't have a page, I could do a radio show every day. I could wake up in the morning, read the paper, turn on the microphone, do my show, you know, be done a couple hours later. Boom. We'd have a daily radio show, but that won't help you a lot if you're sitting at work staring at a monitor, will it? Haha. But I want to talk to you a minute about this Bhutto assassination. And a couple of things. Let me start with first with Musharraf. Which weird. I remember asking a while ago, will Musharraf be the first John Stewart guest to be assassinated? Well, he may be the first John Stewart guest to assassinate somebody. We just don't know. But I heard him, he was talking to, I think it was that Laura Logan, who is so pretty, she's distracting. If they're going to do a serious interview, they need to, I mean, she knows a whole lot about the interview. She's that really, really good-looking blonde that's inside the, she's like Christiana Amanpour. She'll just stand right there doing a report, and you hear snipers behind her. Your bullet's going dang, and that, and you're going, whoa, lady, why don't you go somewhere? I'll file your report. But she's that good, and she's blonde. Yeah, like a blonde wouldn't stand out in Baghdad. Anyway, she did an interview with Musharraf, and he had a good point. Even if you love Bhutto to death, and if you hate Musharraf with all your guts, he's got a point when he says it was her fault in that she stood up. You don't do that. She's in a, you know, there's a mob of people around her, wild guess, 2,000 people. And Musharraf said he warned her, don't go to that rally. That's a very bad region. There are suicider hand jobs all over that place. Half of them hate you there. You know, Al-Qaeda thinks any woman who's trying to be in power needs to be dead, you know, so immediately, hello. And she went to this rally or whatever, and they said something about it's always after the rally where they get you, which I don't understand. Is security better before the rally? Do they want to, you know, hey, even if they shoot them afterwards, be sure you get them on stage alive. Maybe that's part of the deal. But after the rally, she got in her car, and she stuck her head out and was smiling and waving. Well, you don't do that. Hey, lady, do you remember who John F. Kennedy was? You know, I don't know why in 1963 they didn't have the brains to realize that any hand job with a rifle could change history. Why didn't they know that in 63? In 1865, they could have learned that 98 years previous, but no, people can't learn. I know it just sounds like mindless tequila bragging, but if I was in charge of the Secret Service and they said, Bart, we're going to parade the president down downtown Dallas in a convertible, I'm thinking, no, that's a bad idea. Do you remember Lincoln? I don't know why people do that. Anyway, so here she is in whatever bad part of town, bad part of Pakistan she is. She's sticking her head out, waving and smiling, and this guy apparently fires off a couple of shots and then sets off the bomb. And stupidly, they opened up by saying, she was shot. And then he came back later and said, no, this is why I remember it. They came back later and said, no, looks like the bomb got her. And then the third time they said, well, she hit her head on a lever, you know, like, I don't get that. I don't know if when the shots rang out, someone grabbed her and pulled her down real damn hard and fast to get her out of the way of the shots. And she hit her head on whatever, some kind of door handle with such force that it killed her or knocked her out. But anyway, all that didn't make a whole lot of sense. But lady, what are you doing? And the reason I wanted to get into this is after she is, well, first of all, Bush invited her back. Hey, lady, how would you like to go back to Pakistan and run the place? She's going, oh, keen. It's like, well, you know, when are people going to learn to stay away from President Poison? Anyone who gets near George Bush is either dead or discredited or, you know what I'm saying. So anyway, she thinks that'll be a nifty keen idea. Yeah, let's all go back to Pakistan where, you know, hello, Al-Qaeda. Yeah, let's all go back there and piss those people off. Not that I say we should kowtow to him, but yeah, if you're a woman running for president, let's start waving flags, you know, shoot me, put a target on your front, target on your back. So anyway, Bush invites her to go back with some kind of power sharing bullshit. And I never did get that. Bush telling Musharraf, take off your uniform. A little kinky, George. What, your buddy, that gay White House reporter guy, he wasn't available. What's his name? Jeffy Boy? But apparently Musharraf was supposed to take off his uniform to signify that he was a civilian and no longer in the military and that the civilians were going to run this country. I didn't get into a whole lot. I'm a busy man. I got too much shit to do. So anyway, he invites her back to Pakistan and they're going to have some kind of power sharing deal. And then after she's killed, then Bush comes out and says, oh, what a blow. Oh, she was the linchpin to democracy in the entire Middle East. The Pakistan nuclear arsenal is, you know, it's going on. We'll say, hey, George, I got an idea. Why don't you recognize that she's that important before she gets killed? Why couldn't you give the hand jobs at Blackwater, give them 100, give whatever, 10 of them, $1 million a month? That's $100,000 a month. Hell, $100,000 a week if it's controlling the nuclear, you know, if the Pakistan nukes get in Al-Qaeda's hands, $1 trillion we would pay to get that back. So why wouldn't we pay $1 million a week to put 10 guys around her that know what they're doing and to protect the linchpin to peace in the Middle East? But no, they didn't think to do that. And I heard some rumor that she had some FBI guy advising her, but what good does it do to get advice from some FBI guy who's an expert on security if you say, no, I want to walk into the crowd full of Al-Qaeda hand jobs? Well, lady, I can't protect if you do that. Well, I'm sorry. It's what I want to do. That's why she's dead. That's why Musharraf, who may be a killer murderer, I don't know, but he's right when he says, if you, in effect, take off your bulletproof vest and wave your arms around screaming, shoot me, somebody will. And how is it, like I say, maybe Musharraf set her up to be hit, but I don't know. Does he have connections to the suiciders? I don't know. Anyone that's willing to blow themselves up for the cause, I kind of think is on the bad people's side. I mean, I understand brave pilots fly into danger and brave soldiers walk into danger and that kind of stuff. But to pull the pin on your own bomb wrapped around your chest, that's not our side. That's the other side. So that makes me think maybe he wasn't involved. But it all gets down to that idiot Bush. If she was the one or our best chance for peace in the Middle East, why didn't you do something about it? Why didn't you? What are you doing about leadership? Do you think leadership is being able to spell the word? Leadership is when you take action to make things better. Why don't you tell Bhutto, if you go back to Pakistan, I want you to be under Secret Service / FBI security, and you got to do everything they say, or they're just going to shoot you, and don't waste my time. I saw a thing on the internet. Everybody hates them. They're like Hillary and Paris Hilton, but you remember Rob and Amber from Survivor? They got a poker show. Someone gave him like $1 million to pretend that he's going out to Vegas to learn how to play poker. So they make a deal with Daniel Negreanu, arguably the best poker player in the world, that he's going to teach Rob how to play poker. So the first hour, first day, first 5 minutes, whatever, he sits him down and says there's five rules. One of them is you don't drink on the job. Two of them is your wife's got to be on board or this isn't going to work. You can't concentrate on a poker tournament if your wife's going crazy at home and going to pack up and leave and take the kids kind of stuff, you know. Anyway, but he said, if you're not going to follow the five rules, don't waste my time. I'm a goddamn busy man. I'm one of the best poker players in the world. I can make $100,000 an hour. So, you know, if I waste an afternoon with you, maybe I'm out $300,000-$400,000. Don't waste my time. That's a speech that Bush should have given to Bhutto. If you're going to go over there, don't go over there. Here's the five rules. You stay under Secret Service protection. You do what they tell you. And then B and C and D, whatever else you need to worry about. But no, Bush couldn't handle that. Or maybe Bhutto's the idiot here. I don't know who's the idiot. But you got a dead leader who is supposed to bring stability to the unstable Pakistan nuclear arsenal, and they just fucked it up like they fucked up everything that Bush has touched. You know, you make a list of everything that's gone wrong since he took office. Yeah, Bush or his Wolfowitz and Cheney, you know, that whole gang, they've screwed up everything they've touched. Nothing they've touched has come out good. Everything they've touched has gone bad, 100% bad, and everybody knows it, and people still keep trusting them. What's wrong with people? Remember the definition of insanity? Yet people still continue to do business with or get in bed with George Bush, and they're all either dead or in jail or discredited or whatever. But whatever Bhutto's problems were, if she had just taken the Daniel Negreanu poker advice, you know, if you're not going to follow my rules, why do we even bother with this? So now Bhutto's dead, and her 19-year-old son apparently is going to take over and run the movement. By the way, is his first name Barack? On this next bit, if you think I sound like a Republican, you're wrong. In this next bit, it's just that I'm right. And if you think I sound right like a Republican, it's because you are too far to the left. The subject is, big headline, U.S. Whore Today, January 8th, speedboats threaten to blow up U.S. ships. Iran plays down confrontation, Pentagon calls action reckless. Iranian speedboats harassed three Navy ships in the Strait of Hormuz over the weekend, a reckless, in quotes, provocation that comes as President Bush gets ready to go to the Middle East. Five small boats believed to be part of Iran's Revolutionary Guards threatened to blow up the frigate Ingraham, missile cruiser Port Royal, and missile destroyer USS Hapa, as in Grasshopper, in international waters Sunday about who gives a hell damn what time it was. Isn't that stupid? I mean, I understand you want some detail, but, you know, they're always doing that in, when they talk about, oh, a bomb blew up 14 miles north-northwest of Baghdad. Well, outside of Baghdad. Do we need to know it was north-northwest and 14 miles? If it was 12 miles, would it all be different? No. But we need to know it was 8 o'clock in the morning. Okay. The Iranian actions were reckless and dangerous, Pentagon spokesman Brian Whitman said. Is he? I think he's gay. Brian Whitman? I don't know. Why does the Pentagon keep hiring gay spokesmen? Who was that first guy? Brian Williams? That isn't right. He works for NBC now. He was a Pentagon spokesman during the first Gulf War. Gay as they come, which is okay with me, but you got to don't ask, don't tell. And the spokesman for the Pentagon is gay? I'm sorry. Sunday's incident escalated after high-speed boats approached the Navy's vessels from the north. So you have to know it's from the north or the story doesn't count. Said Vice Admiral Kevin Cosgrove. Can you have an Admiral Kevin? To me, you know, it's funny how different names go with different eras. You know, like if your name is Emily or Edith or, you know, there's a whole lot of names that you just know they're 90 years old. And if your name's Heather, you're probably in your 40s or 50s just because when we were kids, you know what I mean? And today it's all biblical. It's all Jacob and Matthew and Isaiah and all this. You know, it's just nutty how a lot of times for a guy's name, you can tell how old he is, but Admiral Kevin sounds funny. Admiral Kevin, commander of the 5th Fleet, the boat split into two formations, zoomed around the ships, and radioed a threat that U.S. ships would explode. Oh, this is getting me pissed off. Crew on two of the boats, Shouldn't it be The Crew? I'm gonna add the. The crew on two of the boats dropped two boxes in the path of the Ingraham. The boats came within 500 yards of the U.S. ships, which were prepared to fire. Oh, that's good to know. Sons of bitches. Anybody remember the U.S. Cole? Or the USS Cole? Sorry, I forgot an S. But they blamed that on Clinton. Here we got a damn warship pulling into the fucking port of Yemen, of all places. And they just standing with their fingernails while these boats come and, you know, pull up next to them. And they go, hi, how you doing? And then they blow up and they kill 20 sailors and they blow a big hole in the boat. It's like, hey, warship, do you ever think that you might want to be on guard for, oh, I don't know, people you might be at war with? Now, remember, this is all during a time when they say Clinton had a chance to grab bin Laden, but he didn't do it. Everybody knew that bin Laden was so guilty back before 9/11. Everybody knew it was so obvious. Bill Clinton, silver platter, and he refused because he didn't, he claimed some legal yada-da-da. But the thing is, the CIA couldn't put bin Laden on anything in particular. They couldn't put, his fingerprints weren't on anything. They suspected, but, you know, Bill Clinton isn't the type of guy that would go kidnap a guy from some other country on a whim like the current monkey. So anyway, the coal, they just stand there while these ships come up and pull up next to them, and of course they're dynamite, suiciders, and they kill whatever, 15, 20 soldiers. And so I kind of like to think that a warship in the damn Straits of Hormuz is not going to take a bunch of crap from some little sons of bitches in some little fucking boats. What's wrong with our Navy? There probably is something fishy here because these boats are all billion-dollar boats. So you'd think they could afford a $200 video camera, you know what I mean? Cameras are damn cheap now. I'll bet there, if there's 500 men on that ship, there's probably 50 camcorders. So, you know, they've got footage of this. I'll be damned, if I'm Secretary of State or if I'm President, every one of my boats is going to have a shoot whenever you damn want kind of order in this situation. Now, when you quote me, be sure you put that in this situation. A, I don't think we should be in the Straits of Hormuz. We're just there to provoke, but take that as a separate issue. We're talking about our boats are in a position in what we call international seas. And now five little bitty boats start fucking with us and we take it? What's wrong with our Navy? I mean, here, I'm accusing Bush of being too liberal, too lefty with his military force, which is crazy. But you don't do that. You don't let five little boats, it says they zoomed around the ships and radioed a threat. That would not happen under President Barkov. I'm going to tell every Navy vessel there is, if some little pissant boat comes towards you saying, let's see, are the exact words here? But somewhere they quoted them as saying, you know, your ship will burn in 5 minutes, something like that. And they threw these cubes or whatever, these boxes into the water in front of the Ingraham, whatever. For all we know, they're poison gas or biological agents, some kind of anthrax. We don't know. Who knows? But when you're engaged, when an enemy engages you and throws something suspicious at you, you can't say, oh, that's probably an empty box. You got to assume it's trouble, whether it is or not. But why didn't we slap these guys? They got cameras, so it's not like it's our word against theirs. No, here's the camera. Here's our giant, you know, where's the goddamn Fifth Fleet? And we're taking crap from little boats. What's wrong with these? Anyway, so here's the Fifth Fleet, and here come these little sons of bitches, and these little flies, these little gnats that can kill. They're buzzing around the boat, and they're saying, hey, you better back off. By gosh, if I was you, I'd step back. What a bunch of crap. You blow one of them up, and you say, hey, you all want some too? And you give them maybe 30 seconds. If they keep coming or fail to retreat, you blow another one up. If you're in a bad mood, you blow all five up. What are you doing? You don't do that. It's like me walking up to Mike Tyson saying, hey, pussy, you want a piece of me? Yeah, he's going to give me one shot, and I may survive that punch. I might not. But you don't go up to Mike Tyson and taunt him. That's what we have here. These people walk up, these suicidal hand jobs, they come up to our ships and they start taunting us. We will set you aflame in 5 minutes. Hey, guess what, dude? You're not going to see 5 minutes. Boom. Why don't they do that? What's wrong with them? And now you think, oh, warlike Bart with his guns, torture Bart, always ready to hurt somebody. No, this is war. These are warships at war next to a hostile country at the, you know, whatever Bush has done to provoke it. Iran is a hostile country. And when they send five of their boats out to say, hey, we're going to burn you up. No, guess what? Boom. It's so easy. Why doesn't everybody see it that way? Why didn't our guys fight back? Yeah, I kept hearing on the news, They said they were just about to fire back. Oh, yeah, they were. They formed a committee, and they were going to, the committee was going to appoint a Blue Ribbon Commission, and they were going to investigate the possibilities considering to fire back. Well, no, you blow them little bastards out of the water. What's wrong? We invaded a country. We've killed 1 million Iraqis. What is 5 little Iranian boats? What is that a problem for? If the Iraqi bastards have been circling, whatever, off Florida, saying we're going to set Florida on fire, yeah, we'd smoke them then. Why don't we smoke anybody that walks up to us in our territory, international waters, whatever, a couple of miles around my boats, that's my water. You come into my water, A, you're in trouble. You know, if I had, say I had a lot of money, I go to Miami, I rent one of them Don Johnson cigarette boats like on Miami Vice, and I'm tooling around, doo-doo-doo, I'm running around the Gulf just having a good time, and I see a destroyer or an aircraft carrier or something. And I think, well, hey, I'll go buzz those guys. How much fun? No, I wouldn't do that. I think, well, they might make a mistake. They might hit the wrong switch or something and blow me out of the water. So I'm not going to screw with a giant warship. And this is off the Florida coast, you know. But here they are in the Straits of damn Hormuz, and our ships are sitting there saying, you better watch out. I'm telling you now, don't you be circling me one more time. That's all crap. But we just take it for the dumbest reasons. We invade countries that never did anything to us. And when a couple little hand jobs come at us, say, we're going to burn you up, then we say, please. Well, we didn't exactly say please, but our failure to shoot back showed that we were less than prepared to engage them. And that's what you don't want to do that if you're a military. You know, it's a lot like poker. If you fold, or it's a lot like being a Senate Democrat. If you fold every confrontation, then the enemy gets emboldened. That's the big problem we got now. The Democrats folded every single time. Every time the Republicans ran the boats around us, we said, oh, please don't hurt me, please. And so they know they own us now. First time Bush got out of line, if they'd slapped him down, then he would know you can't do that again. Same with that Tyson example. I go up to Mike Tyson and say something he don't like, he could give me a backhand, maybe knock a tooth out, bloody my lip, maybe knock me out. Okay, I think I've learned something. I think I've learned you don't go up to Mike Tyson and smart off. You know, hey, Mike, stupid tattoo on your face. What'd you get drunk and have your mother do? Bam! You know, I'm laying on the ground full of blood. I learned not to do that next time. There's a natural order of things that the Democrats, and in this particular case, the Navy, don't seem to understand. You don't do that. You don't walk up to somebody physically superior to you and taunt them. What is wrong with this world? Everything's topsy-fucking-turvy. Am I the only guy who's a rational, down-the-middle, sees both sides but chooses the right path guy that you've heard or read today? Today's Tuesday. Jon Stewart's return to TV was last night, Monday. And you know how much I love Jon Stewart, but he was awful. He was worse than awful without his writers. And maybe worse than awful is not the right thing, but compared to Jon Stewart with his writers, Jon Stewart without his writers is maybe a 1 or a 2 funny on the scale. And worse, he didn't even try. Jesus Christ, it's the Monday between Iowa and New Hampshire. He didn't have any politics to talk about. He did one political joke. He showed Chuck Norris standing behind Huckabee, and then he made a joke. He showed, Steven Seagal standing behind Romney. And that was his only political joke of the night. John, hello. Did you remember which business you're in, John? The whole rest of the show, he talked about the writer's strike, which is a legitimate thing, but not in the middle of a war, in the middle of a presidential campaign. You know, there's a whole lot of news going on right now. For John to spend the 95% of his show on the strike was stupid. He came out, said kind of high, did this and that, did his one political joke, and then he talked about the strike for a long time, didn't get many laughs at all, and I thought the crowd even was a little, you could sense a little disappointment in the crowd. John would say something, and you kind of expect it to be funny, get ready to laugh, get a big lung full of air, and it's like, oh, he just kept striking out again and again. Then to go to commercial, he comes back, and he introduces some guy, a labor negotiating expert with the whatever University of Virginia or something, and they talk for 10 minutes. And John, all the time, not being funny. And then they go to break, and I'm thinking, well, yeah, come back with something. And they come back, and he talks another 5 minutes with the labor guy. It's like, dude, I know it's your living. It means a lot to you. He did make one good point, though. Let me reiterate the one good point he made. They took somebody, Viacom, whoever owns Comedy Central and everything else, they sued YouTube for $1 billion because they were unauthorizingly, if that's a word, using Daily Show clips, which was a dumb move because all it was doing is giving publicity to Jon Stewart. If you see a clip and you know he's on TV tonight, you're going to turn on you're going to make it a point. You're going to set an alarm. You're going to do whatever. You go, hey, I got to catch that guy. He's funny. But no, they sued him for $1 billion to take those clips off. Then they turn around and tell the writers, there's no money to be made on the internet. We can't give any money because there's no money to be made after suing them for $1 billion to take the content down. Now, if I'm a comedy writer for Jon Stewart and I make, I don't know, $100,000 a year, I don't know what his writers make. They say Leno and others make $200,000, so maybe he makes $100,000, maybe not, maybe $80,000, whoever. But if I make $100,000 writing for Jon Stewart, and then they put that on the web and make $2 an episode, you know, that's what it costs. $2 if you want to download, you know, say you're a big Jon Stewart fan, you never miss a show, you missed a show last night, and you got to see that show, you heard it was funny, you got to go online, pay $2 to see that show. Now, if 1 million people do that, that's $2 million. The writers don't get a penny of that. That's just wrong, and everybody knows it's wrong. And I wondered if the writers couldn't have played a little hardball. When he was talking to the labor guy, he said, the strike will be over when one side caves in, essentially, and the side that caves in is going to be the one without the money. Well, gee, between the billionaire owners of the studios and some writer living in New York, gee, I wonder which one has more money. If they had some money, they could say, tell you what, we want you to come back to the table, and we want a deal by Friday, or we're not going to write for you the rest of the year. If you're willing to write off 2008 in the first few months of 2009, then fine, don't talk to us. But, you know, you're in the business of making TV shows, you're in the business of making movies. If you want to get out of that business, then don't talk to us. Because, you know, they got a lot of hit shows. Take the show Lost. I don't know how big a hit show it is these days, but the stars have Lost. If someone tells them you're not going to work in 2008, fine. They'll go get in a movie or they'll go do something else. And when ABC sees that they're making, you know, $200,000 a minute instead of $1 million a minute, well, gee, maybe they might break off a little bit of money. But I don't care how long the strike goes. Yeah, I kind of miss my shows, but everyone who's not watching TV, maybe they're cruising the internet looking for some political humor. You never know. But, John, I hope you get your writers back, because without your writers, I hate to say it, but you're not very funny. At least you weren't last night. And last night, think about it, he had 9 weeks to work on his comeback. Now, I know it doesn't exactly work that way, but if you're not working, funny things pop in your head. And if every time something funny popped in your head, you wrote it down, gee, 9 weeks later, you got 200 jokes there. Hello, John. You didn't think of any jokes in the last 9 weeks, John? Have we misplaced our faith in you as a very funny man? You're a great deliverer. If you got them 25 writers, your show is among the funniest things on TV. But I just hate to think that John's not funny and they're just feeding him. And I didn't see Colbert. I was thinking what a shame that would be if John came out and was bad and Colbert came out and was funny as hell. That'd make John look extra bad, but I didn't see it, so I had no vote on that. Anyway, that's all the strike news.
Your number one country station.
Here's a letter from a guy named Jerry. And sometimes, person in my position, you don't know if you're dealing with somebody with a legitimate argument or if you're dealing with someone who's just going to say something provocative to see his name on the page. You just don't know sometimes. But this is one of those letters where you just don't know which way he means to go with this. Is he trying to make a serious argument, or is he just... People know that if you attack me, I'm going to print the letter and attack back. That's kind of a, 12 years, you think there may be a pattern? So he launched what I consider to be a dumb attack, so let's get into it. What the hell? Entitled Hillary, this is an email he sent. I can't believe she went musky. Now, Jerry must be old, because back in, was it 72? Muskie was a senator from somewhere, probably Massachusetts, but it could be Maine, somewhere up there. He was running for president. This is how I remember. It could be all different, but this is how I remember. I think it was in 72. He was running with McGovern, not with, but against McGovern for the Democratic nomination. And somebody called his wife names, and I think he was in New Hampshire, which, coincidence, today is New Hampshire Day. But he called a press conference. I remember seeing it. He was standing there. He looked already dead. He was an older man anyway, and he's very blustery, cold. You know how you don't look very good when it's cold. He's got his big, giant, whatever those overcoat jackets are, kind of wrapped up under his neck. And he's standing on the courthouse steps, whatever, and he's crying because somebody called his wife's name. So he's standing there. Here's this man in his 60s crying, boo-hoo. And that's what Jerry's accusing Hillary doing, which... Now, a little caveat here. If Jerry read about this, maybe he just made the mistake of taking the whore press's word for this. Mrs. Bart told me last night, she said that Hillary Gets Emotional was the number one headline on Yahoo for most of Monday. The idea that Hillary gets emotional. My God, what did she do? Did she fall on the ground and cry and beat her fist into the floor screaming, it's not fair, it's not fair, it's not fair, it's not fair. And, you know, that took about a half an hour. No, that didn't happen. And if Jerry read of the account in the whore press and CNN, it was the only story, you know, Pakistan could have launched against India or America yesterday, and that wouldn't have been the top headline. Hillary Gets Emotional was the number one across the globe headline yesterday. And then finally, after the, oh, and fucking Wolf Blitzer, the biggest whore on CNN, they just couldn't let it go. First he calls the roundtable. Let's get Bill Bennett in there. Let's let Donna Brazile get in there. Let's get 15, 20 people in there. Let's go around. What'd you think about it? 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 As if it mattered. But when the truth came down to it, let me get a little further on to Jerry's letter. As much as it would have been a hoot to have Bill Clinton as first gentleman, it wasn't worth it for four more years of Republican hate attacks. Jerry wants a pony. Jerry wants to live in a country where the Republicans don't launch their hate attacks all the time. Well, hey, all you had to do is wish for it, and it comes true, right, Jerry? Jerry, this has to be a case where you just wanted to see your name on the page, or in this case, you wanted to hear your name on the radio, because nobody could be that stupid to say you don't want Hillary to be president because you're tired of the right-wing attacks. They're coming either way, and that's apparently what I can't convince anybody. That's the truth, but it's going to happen. John Kerry was a nice, decent guy. He was a war hero. He served his country from the time, I guess, he was 18 until that time, till today. And all he got was a dirty scumbag, metal-stealing, desertion bastard. It doesn't matter who you put up. The slime is going to come either way. That's why I want a slime returner. That's why I want a knife fighter in there instead of a nice guy with a toothy smile. But anyway, Jerry thinks if Hillary doesn't get the nomination, the Republicans will launch no more slime attacks. And Jerry is old enough to remember Muskie, so what do you think about that? Jerry's got to be 50 or in his 50s, and he still hasn't learned that the Republicans are going to come at you no matter what. Okay, America is tired of that shit, he says. Well, yeah, guess what, Jerry? We're tired of it. We're tired of rainy Mondays, too. Should we pass a law against rainy Mondays? Jesus, with whom am I arguing here? Got to get rid of the Republican Clinton hate machine. Yeah, that's right. The only part of the Republican hate machine, it's all geared to Clinton. As soon as Clinton leaves, then they're going to be nice people. You got Jerry's Nancy Grace guarantee that the Republicans will be nice and they're going to play fair if there's no Clintons involved. Christ, Jerry, are you an idiot? I'm not calling you one. I'm asking the question. I'd rather watch the Republicans go racist on Obama and bury themselves for good. Oh, you think they'll lose money by going racist? Do you know who Harold Ford is? Harold Ford was ahead in the Senate race in 2006. I don't know how far, but I just heard this on Air America Radio. He was ahead until that Corker bastard ran those commercials with the blonde playmate going, "Call me Harold." And every racist son of a bitch in Tennessee, which is apparently the majority, thought, well, I got a white wife. I can't have Harold Ford raping her. So he voted against Ford. Now, you tell me where the logic is there, but that's how people are. Nobody is as stupid as an American voter. How many times you heard me say that? 500? 600? Because it's true. They're stupid as they can be. And I'm not saying if you're for Obama, you're stupid, but I'm hearing all these, you know, I do politics from pretty much nonstop. And all I've heard is how people feel good when they hear Obama speak. They say, what does he stand for? And they say, I don't know, I just like it. It's back to the thing about who would you rather drink a beer with? Would you rather drink a beer with Obama or with Hillary? And most people are saying Obama. Well, this isn't a beer drinking contest. So you know what the good news is? This is going to be over for me and you, this Hillary problem, on February 5th. It's my guess she's either going to have the nomination sewed up or withdraw on February 6th. It's not like we're going to spend the entire 2008 tearing each other apart. That ain't going to happen. We're going to tear each other apart for another 3 weeks. So that's what we got here. If Obama gets the nomination, I'm going to be 100% Obama. And I don't know what my detractors will say. That's what I've always said I'm going to do. And I'm going to do what I say I'm going to do. Of course, unless some craziness happens. But if Obama wins the nomination, I'm not going to go neutral, and I'm not going to go Republican, so duh, what do you think I'm going to do? I'm going to be 100% pro-Obama, just like you should have been 100% pro-Hillary, but you refuse to do that. Shame, shame, shame. Obama isn't the answer either. Oh, well. He wants two ponies. This is killer. This is great. He only wants the Republican slime machine to go away, and he hates Hillary and Obama. So how many ponies do you want, Jerry? You want a stable of ponies? Obama isn't the answer either. He wants to open the borders just like Hillary, Bill, and the rest of them, Dems and Pubs. It won't be long before we will have illegals entering the U.S. at 80 miles an hour. Well, Jerry, you don't want a Republican, you don't want Obama, you don't want Hillary and Bill. I assume you're an Edwards man, but you didn't have the wherewithal to bother to put his name into the mix, which is confusing. I always hate that. Guy wrote the other day about screaming that Clinton wasn't the best president in the last 60 years. Well, you can say that, but you're going to have to elevate somebody above him. And JFK doesn't work because I'm talking about repeat performance. I'm talking about winning two elections. Anybody can say, oh, he was my favorite. But as far as convincing the voters twice, nobody's done that since 1942. And so Clinton's the only one that's done it in 60 years. So you can't, it's like, well, I started to say the home run record, but that's in doubt. But you can't take away from him that he won the two elections. You can't do that. You can pretend all day. You can ask for three ponies or 300 ponies, but the facts are the facts, and you can't change them. But Jerry's got a really bad problem with Hillary, with Obama, with Bill and Hillary. I don't guess he wants anyone to be president, but he's really passionate about politics. That just kills me. I'm not saying this about Jerry, but the Andrew Sullivans, the Maureen Dowds, the people, the Christopher Hitchens, the people who hate everybody. Well, they stand for nothing. If American cars are shit and Japanese cars are shit and German cars are shit, but you love cars, explain yourself. There's another letter that, of course, I can't find that I wanted to do for you, but it involves this thing. I tried to do this on the page, but it doesn't work so well on the page. There are times when vocal just works a whole lot better than the written word. I'm going to try to explain this thing about Obama and the passion in his speech. But it seems to me that Obama, in a Clinton-esque way, back around 2003, he was sort of against the war. You know, he went on record as saying, I'm not against all wars, I'm just against dumb wars. And now that it's turned into the biggest shitstorm we've ever seen, he's like, I told you, but you wouldn't listen to me. I tried to tell you, but you didn't listen to me. But that's not what we have. So I want you to break this down into a little thing. Here's what, if Obama was as serious as he wants you to believe about him, this is what he should have said. For instance, did Obama ever go on Meet the Press and say, Tim, this war is a mistake. It's a gigantic mistake. We can't do it. I'm asking the president to stop and rethink. I was on the phone for 3 hours last night with Hillary and Ted Kennedy and Joe Biden. I begged them to listen to reason. They wouldn't do it. They're just blundering headstrong and in this total disaster. I tried to get them to stop. I begged them. I said, please, you can't do this. There's thousands of lives at stake. There's trillions of dollars. The powder keg Middle East, it could explode in ways we have no way. This is unconscionable. We cannot do it. We must stop. You know, no, nothing like that. The old, I'm not opposed to all wars, just the dumb ones. And now he's saying, I tried to tell you, you know, to hear Obama tell the tale. You know, they went to vote and he threw himself over the door and he said, by God, you'll have to kill me to get through this door because I don't want the thousands of soldiers to die. I don't want the Middle East to blow up. I'm trying to stop this debacle before it happens. That's what he's trying to sell us now. And remember, the whole time he didn't have a vote because he wasn't in politics yet. He was a new guy. The old, I would have voted that way had I been there. You know, it's real easy to go back. We've had this argument for years about, oh, everyone knew in 2002 that Saddam was harmless. Well, no, everybody didn't know. If they did know, they would have said so at the time. And we're not talking about, I didn't find any weapons. That's different than there are none. There's two things. It'd be my guess there's two. The two main things that put Obama ahead of Hillary, one is his insistence that he could foresee the future and the people with experience couldn't, which I say is bogus. Because, A, like he didn't have a vote to cast. To say, oh, I'd, you know, It's real easy to say what you would have done when you had no chance to do that. Oh, if I was on the strike team, I would have thrown myself on the grenade. Well, sure, that's easy to say when you're sitting on your ass in Tulsa, Oklahoma. So one, I think it was a phony issue, but it's politics. I mean, if you can magnify a phony issue and win an election, hey, then the other guy wasn't as good as you, and you won and they lost. So I don't have any problem with that. But one thing is this high road, this, oh, I'm above all that, which is bullshit. He's a politician, and he's out to win whatever it takes, even if it includes distorting his record and distorting Hillary's record, which I say is fair. The other thing was, I think the second big factor that knocked Hillary out, remember, she was all, you know, way 20 points ahead of everybody until they asked her that driver's license question in Pennsylvania. And yes, she stumbled over the question, but do you, the listener right now, do you have the answer to driver's license for immigrants? You don't, because there's no good answer. Whatever answer you have, you know, there are a couple of issues in this world where Rush Limbaugh and Jesse Jackson will team up to fight whatever, Pat Buchanan and Al Sharpton. And it's just crazy that way, and immigration's one of them. Hillary answered that question poorly because she tried to finesse it. If there's any question that needs a finesse answer, it's that one, because people can't get insurance without a driver's license. And I've never been hit by a Mexican, but apparently that's a big thing. You know, you always hear stories about, oh, so-and-so got hit by a Mexican, and they didn't have no insurance, didn't have no driver's license, and da-da-da, and you know, you got all these problems. But they can't have a driver's license because that would legitimize them. So you got a deal where either way, you're wrong. You're screwed either way. No matter what decision you make, half the country is going to say, well, look, you don't care about X. And if you go their way, they say, well, look, you don't care about Y. So either way, you're screwed. And they asked her that question, and she answered it poorly, because, like I say, if you, the listener, have a great answer for the driver's license question, I'd like to hear it, and so would Obama, and so would Hillary, and so would Lou fucking Dobbs. God damn, that's all he lives for in life, is shutting down the Mexicans. So if you got an answer, we'd all like to hear it. But the thing is, there is no answer, but that's kind of the minor point. The bigger point is the Bush's whore media hates Hillary so much they had to stop her. They made that the focal, you know, that's what Hillary stands for. She can't answer a question. She's all sides to everything. Everything has 15 sides. As if, right now, today, Tuesday the 8th, whatever it is, they had a collage on CNN last night that Jeannie Moss, who, oh, I would rather shoot myself than hear her again. But she ran this collage of the candidates. I'm for change. I'm the change guy. Oh, you want change? Oh, yeah, let's change. I'm the change guy. You want change? I can make change. I'm the change master. I'm the change mind. And they just went on and on and on. Every son of a bitch in this race is for change. And now that proves, without a doubt, you can't fight it. Every person in this race is a political whore that changed their message to be the agent of change. I'm the agent of change. I'm Mr. Change. I'm Miss Change. Oh, change, change, change. Oh, and they even got David Bowie. Changes. They just went on and on and on. Everyone in the race is a whore, and they're screaming about change, but only Hillary takes the hit for that. You know, how can John McCain, who's been in Washington since, whatever, 1915, he's the agent for change now after being there 85 years, but the press don't get on him for being the agent for change. All these people, you know, every candidate, what's that, 16, 18, 20 candidates? They're all the change candidate, but they single Hillary out for the chameleon. Oh, she says what you want to hear. She changes her story. She's a flip-flopper. She's got, yeah, yeah, yeah. The whore press hates Hillary. We get that. The Republicans are real, real happy that Obama's got the lead, and that should make you wonder. Why is Rush Limbaugh speaking so nice about Obama? Why is Fox News in love with Obama? Why does the Republican Party love Obama? They love him so much. Oh, he's a breath of fresh air. Oh, he's another John Kennedy. He's the greatest thing ever happened to the Republicans. Oh, the Obama train is coming. He's a speeding bullet. Get out of the way. Here comes Obama. And these are the Republicans talking. And nobody but me is suspicious. That makes me wonder. I'm often the only voice to say something, and I know every radio hand job says that, but I take unpopular positions with my own people. And trust me, they let me know. But nobody else, it seems, is worried that Rush Limbaugh loves Obama. Nobody's worried. They think, well, Obama is such a magnetic, great guy that he just won over the fascist dogs. No, that's not the answer. The answer is they want to run against the unqualified black guy named Hussein. It'd be my guess right now, just guessing, that they can't beat him. And if somehow he said, well, every time they go slime on the guy, you know, I mean, it's kind of a carry thing with a finesse. There is a talent. There is a way. You know, some guy makes a 5-minute charge. You did this. You did that. Blah, blah, blah. And at the end of his 5-minute blathering, you say, that's not true. You know, there is a thing there. If you can somehow take his wild, hysterical hair on fire and you just say, not true, you made that up. I get that. And if Obama can pull that off like Kerry didn't, then, yeah, this could be a cakewalk for him. You know, it's a thing. You don't know which way to go. You don't know if you should do like the Clinton team and every attack, damn, 5 minutes later, you smack him back. Or if you somehow, I think Obama has been able to stay above that to some degree so far. Something I saw in Free Republic, whatever that's called, on and on about Hussein Osama is going to turn the White House into a madrasa. Oh my God, that's what we're going to hear until Election Day. And the average man on the street who's not evil, he's just a racist pig dog, you know, like most Oklahomans, like most Texans, like most Carolinians, like most Coloradoans, you know, the Kentuckys, all the problems, the Virginias, all the racist sons of bitches, they're all going to buy into that in a heartbeat. I don't want my kid to grow up and be a Muslim, so I'm going to vote Republican. You know, we're going to get a whole lot of that. Maybe Obama can get his way past that. I sure hope so. But you should be asking yourself, why do they want to run against Obama so badly? Well, I thought that bit was over, but I need to add one more thing. And I am not comparing Obama's candidacy to the war. But after I made a big deal out of Osama, didn't show any passion about stopping the war. He just mentioned that he was opposed to dumb wars. And I didn't want to be accused of that. If the Obama candidacy goes bad, which it might, don't expect it to, and I don't think it will, but it just might. And if Obama crashes and burns, say in, I don't know, August this year, 90 days before the election, if he just does something real bad or says something real stupid, everybody's going to say, what did we do? We've shot ourselves in the foot. And I'm going to say, well, I won't be able to say, see, I told you so, because that'll just generate a shitload of hatred, and I'll get 100 fuck you Barts. I'm canceling my subscription. No, I might get more than that. But I do want to say that I don't want to be the guy who, like I'm accusing Obama of, barely mentioned that perhaps he's not our best shot. I think Obama's a mistake. Maybe he's not going to be a mistake. Maybe he's going to turn out to be just fine. But if he runs the 08 campaign like it's his first real big campaign, his first major campaign, which it is, he could get beat real bad. You know what I mean? He's like anybody. Let's say Eli Manning's a good quarterback. He pretty much stunk his first year, didn't he? I don't know. I think they might have made it to the playoffs, but you know, he's not his brother, and with all the promise and talent that he has, it just takes time to bring that along. You got to learn the ropes. You got to learn where the traps are. You got to learn your way through the system. And if Obama has jumped ahead of the line and failed to learn those lessons, that you know, it's also like a band. A problem with today's bands, you know, if you write a song, they put you on, well, this has been true for 15, 20 years, but you write a song or someone writes it for you and you shoot a video and suddenly you're the hottest star in the world. And, you know, you're 18 years old and you're the hot, like Hannah Montana or whatever, and you're just the hottest thing that ever was. But, you know, every other group, let's say, for the point of my analogy, you know, the other groups started playing in the clubs and they played 5 years in the clubs. And then they started playing the bigger venues and then they start, you know, say like a Bon Jovi. Played a whole lot of New Jersey, you know, 1,000 New Jersey gigs, and then got bigger, and then started playing bigger venues, and, you know, started playing stadiums and that. I think Hillary is a stadium player. You don't? Fine, we disagree on that. But for Obama, Obama's got a hit song, and he's trying to fill up a stadium here. Maybe he'll fill it up. Maybe he won't. But Obama hasn't been at the game, hadn't paid his dues, really doesn't have a record behind him. His record consists of, I was against the war, which Milquetoast was against the war. So we are betting on an unknown. You know what? I think we have a pretty good hand, to use the poker analogy. We got a pretty good hand in our hand. And we're saying, I'd rather have those two cards face down over there. I think that's a mistake, but what am I going to do? No one wants to hear me, but if the shit goes bad, I just wanted to have this on record January 8th, that we're betting on an unknown. That's not a safe thing to do. we had the White House in our hand, but the Democrats decided we didn't want that pony. We don't want a corporatist Cheney clone in the White House. We'd rather gamble. Well, if we are gambling, it appears. Obama, I expect to win tonight. I just looked at Hore Zogby, parentheses, Zogby's for sale. Write him a check. He'll give you a poll result you like. But Zogby's got him 13 to 14 points ahead of Hillary. So if Obama wins tonight, he's going to be set up to run the table. And if he stumbles because he failed to pay his dues, I've said that Obama has failed to throw himself in front of the door and saying, no, you can't do this. You can't go out this door. You can't go to this war. You can't vote for this war. And that's what I'm meaning to do here. I'm saying this is a mistake. If the Obama deal goes bad, nobody's going to say we should have listened to Bart, but I'm getting that out of the way now. And remember, me and you are friends. Come February 5th, February 6th, you won't find a stronger Obama supporter than me. It's a gamble. We gambled when we didn't need to. That's probably the best way I can put this whole conversation about Obama. He may be the best gamble we ever made, but he is a gamble.
Now, the electric prunes for Vox, bringing you the exciting new sound of the Vox Wah-Wah pedal. Let the electric prunes demonstrate the difference. Play it prunes first without the Wah-Wah pedal. Now, listen to the difference when you push that Vox Wah-Wah pedal down. You can even make your guitar sound like a sitar. It's the now sound. It's what's happening. That's why the Electric Prunes, Animals, Hermits, Paul Revere and the Raiders, Stones, the Seeds are all using the Vox Wah-Wah pedal, and it works with any amplifier. If you're a professional musician or want to sound like one, get with the new Vox Wah-Wah pedal at your Vox dealer. Now!
And now I've got something bad to say about Chris Rock, who is the funniest man in the world, I think. Especially when he does his one-hour deal, he's untouchable. And, of course, I'm talking about current working comedians, in case Mrs. Richard Pryor is listening. But Chris Rock messed up. You know, if you take a side in politics, it's one thing to side with the Democratic Party because the other side is fascist Nazi bastards. But when you get in inter-party or intra-party politics and you start slagging the other Democrat, could be a bad move, Chris. Now, apparently Chris is a big Obama backer, which is fine, but why can't he be on Obama's side and not be so against Hillary? He went into this thing, I just saw one or two sentences, he was making a big thing about Hillary thinks she's got experience because she was married to Bill for that many years. And so Chris Rock says, my wife has been married to me, let's say, as many years, but she can't get up on stage and be funny, which is a false analogy, and I'll tell you why. If Chris Rock was married to Wanda Sykes, he couldn't say that. Now, why can Chris be funny and his wife can't? Well, Chris wanted to be a comedian. If his wife wanted to be a comedian, if his wife spent the last 20 or 30 years of her life going to nightclubs, listening to comics, going to the parties afterwards where four or five comics sit around, they smoke dope, they drink beer, they talk about who was funniest and who messed up the delivery and why, you know, this guy was funny because, see, he set the joke up here, he repeated it like 6 minutes later, and then 12 minutes later when he came back with a big slam, he tied it all in and it worked great. If Chris Rock's wife, assuming she's normal and can understand and learn, if Chris Rock's wife studied comedy for 20 years, of course she'd be funny. Maybe not as funny as Chris. It's, you know, it's, if you're the best in the world, it's kind of hard to say, well, you can't do it. Well, yeah, you're right, because you're the best. Reminds me of Rush saying that that Augusta was not racist because they let Tiger Woods come on the field. Well, yeah, he's the greatest of all time, they say. So you're going to let that one black guy, the one that's the greatest ever, yeah, we'll let him in. But the mother niggers, you know, the non-greatest of all time, they can't come in. No, not them, not them darkies. You know, we let the one guy in. See, you know, we get the concept of the greatest of all times. We all understand that. But Chris Rock is trying to beat up Hillary now, saying, oh, you know, as if she was in the kitchen baking. Someone else, oh, who is this? Someone said, just a couple days ago, can't remember, but they said, Hillary thinks she's got experience because she was in the White House for 8 years. Well, you know, so is the pastry chef. Yeah, as if whenever they had a war room, a big, giant, mega problem, and they had to think of how to address it. They went and got the pastry chef and be sure to get her opinion. No, that didn't happen. And I don't know what Hillary's role exactly was in there, but she had an office in the West Wing or whatever, and I'm sure, let's go by West Wing, the TV show we saw. Mrs. Bartlett didn't always have an opinion, but, you know, let's say Jed would call his meeting and he'd talk to his staff and he'd say, well, I can go this way, I can go that way, anything, I'll think about it overnight. And he goes up to the bedroom and he's standing there talking to Stockard Channing, saying, you know, I got this problem, I got this guy, and I, on one hand I got to do this, but on the other hand I got to do that. And his wife might say, well, you know, you got to do what you got to do. You got to take care of A, and if you get B as a plus, well, that's fine. You know, it's like, well, thanks, honey. You've clarified that a little bit for me. The idea that the president's wife, and we're not talking about Pickles. Everybody knows that Pickles has no opinion. Pickles is told to shut up and sit down. She doesn't know anything about anything. All she knows is that her husband's great. That's all she knows. Whatever my husband said, it's true and it's correct, and he means well and he's always right. That's all she knows. She doesn't have an opinion. Do you think they've, outside of alcohol, do you think they've had a fight since he's been in the White House? No. But I can see Hillary, well, as Stockard Channing did on the West Wing. I forget the thing, when Mary Louise Parker was on the show, she had some kind of thing that was good for women, and Mrs. Bartlett told Jed, hey, this is, you know, these are women. These are your core constituents. If you lose the women, you're going to lose the election. You know, that's the kind of thing, that's kind of advice that Hillary would have been giving Bill all these years. When he came to an either-or 50-50 situation, it's real possible Hillary was the tiebreaker on the vote. And you can say all you want. Oh, just because you're married to a guy. You know, Roger Clemens' wife can't pitch 20 games and win. You know, that's all such bullshit. This isn't about, you know, being the greatest in the world. It's about being in the room when the big decisions are made. And if you watch, I mean, after, what, 20 years? He had 10 terms? No, 6 terms as governor, 12 years. 12 years watching the governor make decisions, and then another 8 years watching the president make decisions. And so, yeah, that's what you call experience. Obama's been in politics 2 years, well, 3 now. But I don't know, somehow being in the cabinet, being inside the White House in the war room, in the whatever, during 8 years of emergencies, that and Obama beating Alan Keyes and being in the Senate 2 years, it just ain't the same. You can say it is, but it ain't. Another piece of mail I feel obliged to mention, because I talked about this for a long, long time. Maybe, I think, about a year, because it was, I think Obama declared in January, and so Hillary was going to declare later, but she had to get in since he was in, so Hillary declared in late January or early February last year. And at the time, I started asking people. Everybody was leading the Hillary witch hunt, and I said, again and again, to anybody who would answer me, and many, many people refused to answer, but the question is, are you going to support whoever wins the Democratic nomination? And I'm the only person that I know of, there must be more, but I'm the only person I know of, who said yes, enthusiastically and wholeheartedly. Nobody else would say that, because everybody else was not violently against Hillary, but very, very strongly and harshly against Hillary, so they couldn't say, how are you going to pledge to support the corporatist Cheney clone? How are you going to do that? Oh, that's another one we need to get into. Somebody called me on that, and I'm not lying. I am right. The only way you can be right is if they're, you know, if we're having some kind of semantics problem. I'm pretty sure Obama and Edwards both called Hillary the corporatist Cheney clone, but they might have said, I want your vote because I don't think we need another corporatist Cheney clone in the White House. Now, so you could argue technically they didn't actually call Hillary that, actually, personally, but obviously they did. And I don't know why people are going to try to deny that now. I may have to take some time to go dig myself, but I was hoping someone else would say, well, yeah, Bart, obviously they said it at every speech for the last 6 months. But you don't think either Edwards or Obama either would ever give a speech in the year 2007 and not attack Hillary. You don't think, I mean, Hillary, again, 20 points ahead all through 2007. And you think they're not going to mention that she's a Cheney clone and the corporatist whore and all that stuff? They didn't call her a whore, but you know what I'm saying? All this stuff about you're not going to get change if you vote for Republican light. That's calling her a Cheney clone. But more than that, they use the term Cheney clone. And I've been called on it saying, Bart, they didn't do that, and you know they didn't do it. Well, yeah, I know they did do it. When they called someone a corporatist, Cheney clone, everybody knew who they were talking about, put it that way. But I have an email now from Money G. Sounds like a rapper. Money G writes and says, it says, great snippet from Tom Tomorrow. I don't have a problem with Tom Tomorrow. I have not talked to Tom Tomorrow about this, but I find it very interesting. And repeat, I don't have a problem with Tom Tomorrow, but I find it very interesting that now that Hillary is not the front runner, now you're going to hear the landslide. Oh, we're all for the front runner, no matter who it is. Now that Lincoln's been shot in the head, they're ready to support the ticket. But here it says, from Tom Tomorrow, it says, I'll support a potted plant. Again, whichever race-baiting, science-denying warmonger the Republicans finally settle on, but it doesn't mean I wouldn't prefer a candidate who actually stands up for things I care about, like real health care reform and speedy end to the Iran debacle, given that Kucinich is unlikely to carry the day, that leaves me with Edwards, who is probably not going to make it to the finish line, and then, hooray, the Democrats will once again be offering up a mushy centrist who speaks vaguely of hope and change, of bipartisanship and reconciliation. Why is it always the Democrats who have to reconcile after the spasms of right-wing extremism? Why is partisanship always such a one-way street? So I'm left to make conclusions or draw conclusions. Apparently, Tom Tomorrow does not like Obama. Now, he didn't say that. That's my guess. Because when you say, that leaves me with Edwards, he's probably not going to make it. So it looks like the Democrats will once again be offering up a mushy centrist who speaks vaguely of hope and change. That, to me, sounds like Obama. Because you, the listener, statistically, there must be a dozen of you who are strongly behind Obama. And if I asked you what Obama stood for, you would say change. And I'd say, what else? You'd say, well, doing all the right things. And I'd say, well, what else? Well, I don't know, but I like the guy. You know, see, that's what we got right now. I tried to get into this earlier, and I don't think it took. But, you know, say in 3 years from right now, our next president has been in office for 2 years. Let's say it's all gone to hell. Things are worse than they are now. I know that's not possible. This is a what-if scenario type of deal. But let's say the next president is a Democrat and totally has screwed up everything. If it's Hillary, we're going to say, well, we should have known. We should have known better. You know, that well was, the water from that well tasted pretty good the first two times, but we just should have known that you can't keep going back to that same well. We probably should have known better than to pick Hillary to be our president. But if it's Obama, we're going to be saying, what were we thinking? We didn't know anything about this guy. You know, it's possible. And you got to understand the difference between, this is not an attack. This is a question. Because we know nothing about Obama, and I mean nothing, you can say, oh, you've read his speeches and you saw him on TV, but that, what do we know about Obama? What if he gets in some situation and he caves? What if he gets into, I don't know, say he gets in the debates with whoever wins, let's say it's McCain, and McCain starts beating him over the head with his expertise on foreign policy, and Obama says, well, I lived in Indonesia when I was five, and he throws a fit and he walks off or tears up or something. I mean, we have no idea. If we elect Obama and he turns out to be very much not the president we wanted, we're going to say, what were we thinking? We didn't know a thing about the man. All we knew about the man is, A, he wasn't Hillary. That's the most important thing. You know, next to a Republican, anybody but Hillary. And besides not being Hillary, he was black. And he's handsome, got that toothy smile, got those winning ways, got a calm demeanor. He's got a friendly wave, cute wife, cute kids, young, just like Kennedy. Idealistic, he appealed to the young people. You know, don't mean to be cruel, but is there something wrong when you appeal to just the young, or primarily, I don't know what the word is, but aren't the youngest people the easiest to fool? When you stand up there and say, we need change. By God, we're going to sweep the rascals out, and we're going to bring real, real change. Not this bullshit Hillary change. Not this bullshit Edward change. I'm talking real change. I'm talking real change right now. And if you're young and idealistic and you're hearing it for the first time, you go, yay, he's the man. But if you're, say, 54 and you've heard it all before, yak, 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 bullshit, throw the bums out. I got a broom in my hand. It's time we cleaned up the mess and drained the swamp and every other goddamn bullshit cliche in the world. You know, if you're 54, you've heard it a dozen times or through 12 elections, whatever. But if you're a young, pimply-faced, idealistic 19-year-old who was, 12 years old when Bush the Butcher got in office, yeah, you don't know too much about politics other than Bush is a fascist criminal dog, torturer, murderer, maimer, who likes to shoot animals who are pinned up. You know, if that's all you know about Bush and Obama says we're here for change, well, sure, I'd go for that too. But it's a little, you know, it's like fooling the religious people. You know, that's why the religious charlatans are the worst, because they're fooling the people who can't make it on their own, the people who need a crutch, and you come along and offer them a crutch for a price. But if you're old and you're sick and you're stupid and you're scared, or in this analogy, if you're young and you don't, haven't seen it before and you are easy, you know, it's like your first love. First time a boy said, oh, I love you. Can I get in your pants? You say, well, sure. Sure, you know, he loves me. Well, after you've dated 25 guys and all 25 guys say, I love you, can I get in your pants? After about 6 or 8 of them, you think, hey, I've heard this bullshit before. It would appear to me if Obama's stronghold is the young kids, maybe they haven't been around the block as long as you and I have. And when I talk about you and I must be talking to the other non-Hillary hater who hopefully is a subscriber to the radio show. But like I say, don't go crazy and get mad at me now because I'm attacking Obama, because we got till February 5th. I give you my word, unless the craziest thing in the world happens, I'm going to be absolutely, totally... Oh, and I forgot my point about this whole Tom Tomorrow business. Now that Hillary's lost, now everybody's getting on board with I'm going to support whoever the nominee is, and that's bullshit. That's cowardly to wait until after the game's over. Now you're for the champion the whole time. No, if you're for the champion before the game, that's when it counts. And let's watch for it, because so few people hear these radio shows. Let's watch for it. Today's the 8th. Between now and the 5th, that's 4 weeks, let's call it. Let's see how many people declare in the next 30 days, by God, I'm for the Democratic nominee, whoever it is. So now that Hillary's out, oh, I'm for whoever wins. Yeah, right. Yeah, that's exactly how it works. You keep thinking this.
1986.
But none of these incidents were the big story leading up to New Hampshire. One candidate might have had a fatal blunder.
Hillary Clinton was right on the edge.
Her emotions are on end.
She was clearly fighting back tears.
Is this the end for her now?
Are her days numbered in the race for the White House?
Oh my God, there must have been an emotional meltdown. She must have lost her. She must have dissolved in a puddle of tears. Let's look at the videotape of what happened.
Some people think elections are a game. They think it's like who's up or who's down. It's about our country. It's about our kids' futures. And it's really about all of us together. You know, some of us put ourselves out there and do this against some pretty difficult odds.
That's it? That's the emotional breakdown that blows the election for? Glad no one here ever sees me get a flu shot. Does anyone else have any thoughts on Hillary's breakdown? Anybody?
This is not something I would judge anybody on,
yeah,
one way or the other. And the reality is, if you look at me, September 11, the funerals.
Are you f-ing kidding me? You'll be right back.
And some people think elections are a game. They think it's like who's up or who's down.
May God bless Richard Nixon.
It's all right to cry.
And may God bless the United States.
Well, there you had it. Show number 132 is in the can. Hope you liked it. Hope you liked parts of it. And like I say, it was a weird show because, you know, the entire universe changed. Here it is a day later, but it's politically, it's eons later. We went from the anointed almighty to the, oh my God, it's a race. At this point, I don't hear anybody handicapping the race. They're saying it's anybody's race. Anybody can win. Who knows what's going to happen? Obama raised $1 million a day the first 8 days of the year. Don't know what Hillary raised, but she probably raised a bunch. It'd be nice if they put that money towards something constructive instead of calling each other names, but this is politics. What are we going to do? So I'll tell you what, I'm going to get to work on show number 133. Little sidebar, this is probably the easiest show I ever did. I don't know if it's going to show up on that end like it, but I kind of sat down, talked to the microphone for a couple hours, and boom, we kind of had a show. Of course, I guess a lot of that depends on you. So I'm going to get to work on show number 133. I'd like to thank the subscribers. I'd like to thank the people who send the occasional check in the mail. And if you're listening and not subscribing or didn't send the occasional check in the mail, shame, shame, shame. They're calling this the craziest, most wide-open political season ever. So, might be fun to go through it together. I'd like to thank Chicago Jim for the music. This is Barton K-Drag, and I am out of here.
It's evening in the desert. I'm tired and I'm cold. But I am just a soldier. I do what I am told. We came with the Crusaders. To fight the infidel. There is no justice in the desert, because there is no God in hell. They say Osama's in the mountains, deep in a cave near Pakistan. There's a sea of blood in Baghdad. I see an oil in the sand. Between the Tigris and Euphrates, another day comes to an end. It's Christmas Eve.